Now, beginning Esoteric Astrology 113b, page 413. The triangle hovering above the square. The triangle having to do with the soul consciousness and the three great aspects of divinity, or aspects, truly aspects, and the square having to do with the attributes and with form. It's all a little house, in a way. It's all, you know, when the Masons appear in public, even with their aprons, there is the triangle and the square there as well. The symbolism is preserved. So how will the triangle work out in the square? The triangle pertains to the world of ideas, and these ideas will gradually work their way down into manifestation, but so much will depend upon the quality of the form, its degree of evolution, its degree of responsiveness, because a very fine archetype may exist in the world of ideas, and yet the world of form may be too crude to register it in any faithful way, and there may be a non-registration or a distorted registration. And here comes the sixth reason for the present stress and strain. He's been doing that. He gave us already five reasons, and they've been sort of spread out here. I won't go back and do all of them, but even the condition of the moon was one of them, and the great round of the zodiac being completed was another. The reorientation of the Earth's axis was another, and the present change of ages was another. I think I'm leaving one out, but you can just go back and find that. I would add here a sixth reason for the present strain and stress in the response of the human family to this world crisis, because it is related to the entire question of conscious response to subjective forces, expressing themselves as ideas and vast thought currents. So subjective forces express themselves as ideas and vast currents. We can even say that astrological forces express themselves as ideas and vast thought currents. This is the sixth reason. This is the fact that humanity as a whole is today reversing itself upon the great zodiacal wheel, just as the individual does. Well, when the individual reverses itself, when the individual reverses himself, he becomes an aspirant. And humanity as a whole is becoming an aspirant, even though sometimes DK refers to humanity as the world disciple. The disciple is one who has for a while been on that reversing wheel and has stabilized himself mentally and willfully to a certain extent. The aspirant is just beginning to reverse himself. And naturally, with so many people changing their direction, there will be turmoil, because there will be a contrast of forces between the ones who are changing and the ones who are not. The point of reversal and the sign or signs in which it takes place, oftentimes Libra, something with Uranus in it, Libra or Scorpio, exalted Uranus and Scorpio, or Uranus is the esoteric ruler of Libra. The point of reversal and the sign or signs in which it takes place mark a momentous point of crisis in the life of this kingdom of nature, a momentous point of crisis, a going in a different direction. Energy forms, energy streams butting up against each other, flowing in contrary directions, and producing turbulence, really. Turbulence. That's what we get when we have a square or an opposition, turbulence. Producing upheaval, difficulty, and a whole gamut of readjustments to a different way of life, based on higher principles, necessitated by the reorientation. So what do we have here? We have the reorientation of humanity as a whole. If you add this reason to the other five, you will not be astonished that the situation is today almost fantastic in its difficulty and the extent of its involvement. Well, you know, I have this passion for completeness, so it's so difficult for me not to look at the reasons given here. We have to go back quite a ways, though, don't we? Yeah, okay, here they are in the earlier programs. Well, the welling up of magnetic force on Sirius, the shift of the Earth's polarity drawn upon by a great cosmic center, the great sweep of the sun around the 250,000-year cycle, and that ending. The passing of our sun, of our sign Pisces into that of Aquarius, and that on two levels. The moon and its encouraging of retroactive action. Action which has more to do with the form. You know, when the building energies of the soul are active in the body, then you have health, clean interplay, and right activity. And when the building energies are the lunar lords and those who work under the control of the moon and at the behest of the lower personal self, then you have disease, ill health, and death. So many people are responding. Even the negative magic is lunar magic, involves the sacral center often. And a lot of people respond to this lunar disintegration and are undergoing disintegration themselves. And finally, then, we have what is later discussed, and that is we traveled quite far, didn't we? The reversal of the wheel of humanity. Let's put them down, you know, a little bit if we can. One, Sirius, magnetism. Two, the change in the axis of the Earth. Three, the completion of a 250,000-year cycle, apparently zodiacally determined. When the sun entered Pisces about, well, what were we saying, you know, 47 BC or something like that. In those, sometimes the year 44 BC has been used. The four, change from age of Pisces to age of Aquarius. And this is in two modes, in two levels, lesser precessional and the great Platonic year. Then, number five, the influence or effect of the decaying moon, and we discussed that body and space idea, the difficulty that arises there. On page 795 of A Treatise on White Magic, so the disintegration of the moon, and finally, number six, humanity's reversal of the wheel, with humanity becoming the world aspirant and even the world disciple. Obviously, there are those who are reactionary and just want the status quo. They want to move backwards. Those who want to keep the status quo, those who are fitfully moving forward, who are aspirants, and those who are in a mental and willful and determined way moving forward as disciples. And, of course, the initiates, fewer of them, naturally. Okay, we go on. In every triplicity, there are three major qualities manifesting, or three basic energies, seeking expression and influence. As he manifests in time and space, man discovers this to be true and to constitute a law in nature. And it might be said that the task of the disciple is to become consciously aware, like a detached, onlooking observer, of these energies and their expressing qualities as they function within himself. The one becomes aware of the three. The true life, the true being, the true essence in the center becomes aware of the three. This he does upon the path of probation, the path of discipleship, and the path of initiation, with ever-increasing success. Okay, we've looked at the six causes for disturbance, and now we're looking at the idea that three major qualities, there are always three major qualities and four minor ones, and they always manifest, these three, through every triplicity of influences. And there are so many, we can gather them, you know, they're just so many, and you know what they are, the three fire, earth, air, water signs, life quality appearance, there's the monad soul personality. We can find the triangles everywhere. So he becomes the detached onlooking observer, which eventually leads him to the realization that he is the life essence itself. This he does upon the path of probation, the path of discipleship, and the path of initiation. He has to become aware of what? The threefold energy, which is the personality, and of which the vital body is the synthetic expression, as it carries all of the personality energies. And so we might look at this as mind, emotion, and body, with the vital body synthesizing them. With the vital body as the synthesis. The threefold soul, of which the egoic lotus is the expression, and the triple monad, of which a great diffusion in time and space, in three streams of creative energy, is the expression. And this diffusion may relate to the threefold expression of the monad as the spiritual triad. A great diffusion. There is a pervasive quality of the monad, and three streams of energy are found representing the monad. So there are many ways to count threes. We have left out some fours, and we've left out the spiritual triad, but in a sense, there is the triple monad on its own plane. And when you look at the triple triad, actually you have a six-pointed star, don't you? You have a six-foldness, and when you look at the very essence of the monad, you have the seven. So let's say if we count the spiritual triad as well as the triple monad, we have a six with the point of life making the seven. There are many ways to count, but DK basically saying the threefold monad, and by that he includes the triad, the threefold soul, and he is not really including the central bud and the jewel and the lotus, and the triple personality, he's not considering it fourfold, but he's not considering that synthesis, which is the personality elemental itself. He's simply considering the nine, three, three, and three. And each method of counting has its own particular type of revelation. The triple monad, of which a great diffusion in time or over time and space, many spaces and three streams of creative energy, is the expression. The monad has will, wisdom, and activity, and these are spread out over time and in space. The last definition, he says, is somewhat meaningless to the uninitiate, because it must be a particular perception that goes along with this, but must suffice for the moment. The great observer, the monad, is always there in any dimension, always present, is diffused or is pervading every possible time, maybe even simultaneously in a sense, and every possible space and spaces are perceptions in consciousness. Without perception, there is no space. Space itself is a perception. There is a manifesting aspect in all these triplicities, which is the result of and conditioned by the interplay of three forces. The manifesting, it is their full expression and the result of their successful activity. So there is always a four for every three. There is always a square for every triangle. There is always a square for every triangle. And we have vehicles involved here. I think he could mean we have the personality vehicle. Oh, that's not good. Personality vehicle. We have the egoic lotus or soul vehicle. And we have the monadic vehicle. And that is the manifestation of each particular triangle. So when we have now, from having a nine, if we add the vehicles, we have a 12. All right, how will he put this? Okay, in the personality, it is the physical body. Okay, this is a little different than I looked at it, but yes, of course. Mind, emotions, etheric body, and the physical body as a synthesis of them. The personality elemental is not mentioned. In the soul, it is the unfolded central bud within the egoic lotus. Ah, this is interesting, a different and more subtle method of approach. In the monad, it is the sound which geometrically forces itself into the vision of the beholder. That is a Devic statement, as the Devas see sound and hear color. A deeply esoteric mode of symbolizing that which cannot be expressed or reduced to tangibility of form. So the truly initiate consciousness is required to apprehend this. But in every case, what is the main point? The main point is that there is always a four for every three, or a fourth for every three. So the physical body is a kind of a synthesis of the personality. It is a vehicle itself, and it is closely allied with the personality as a whole. Both of them can be represented by the number four, because the physical body occurs on the fourth plane, and the personality is the fourth elemental. In the soul, the central bud, which is the, I suppose we would call it not only the three synthesis petals, but the jewel and the lotus, and it is a four in that respect. The synthesis petals and the jewel in the lotus make together a four. And they also make a fourth factor. So the three, the ninefold petals, the three tiers, are synthesized in the central bud. Here we're synthesizing upward, and in the case of the personality, we're synthesizing downward. And in the monad, well, who is to say what this means? If the Tibetan is not reducing this to tangibility of words, we have only to ponder it. In the monad, it is the sound. The monad carries seven great sounds and seven great geometries, and every sound creates its own geometry. It is the sound which geometrically forces itself into the vision of the beholder. You kind of wonder if this is associated with the Temple of Ezekiel or the monadic vehicle, which probably is a geometrical demonstration. Geometrically forces itself into the vision of the beholder, a deeply esoteric mode of symbolizing. It is blending sound and vision together. And, you know, on that level, the Deva kingdom and the human kingdom actually are united. They are harmonized on the Buddhic plane, and they are somewhat antagonistic on the astral plane. But there is a union of deva and human on the monadic level, and so perhaps it is legitimate, well, must be, to blend the idea of sound and vision. So the fourth factor is some sort of archetypal sound geometrical pattern, which may be the monadic vehicle after all. But I wouldn't, you know, rest content with saying that it is. It's something beyond my present apprehension and something that has to be pondered. If students will bring this idea to the study and understanding of the astrological triangles, that every three produces a fourth, and will refuse to lose sight of the related triple energies, they will greatly simplify their study. So let's look at what the original idea was before he began to enumerate. He said, there is a manifesting aspect in all these triplicities. That's the idea. The manifesting aspect in all these triplicities. Well, vehicles are vehicles of manifestation. It's pretty easy to see with the physical vehicle, but when we go to the central bud, is that the manifesting aspect? It certainly carries both buddhi and atma, and buddhi is sometimes considered the manifesting aspect of the fourfold cosmic etheric setup. So there's a manifesting aspect in all these triplicities, which is the result of and conditioned by the interplay of three forces. This I simply have to underline and make bigger as the point which is being elaborated and which we are to keep in mind as we study the science of triangles. So often what you do find is that there is a triangle hovering above a fourth point, sometimes a fourth point above the triangle, but this fourth point is the manifesting aspect or the form through which the energies of the triangles play. The etheric body is organized in triangles, largely, and at least our etheric body is. Well, the etheric body of the planet in triangles and squares, and the squares are to be turned into triangles. And then these triangles will manifest through the dense physical form. But we cannot say on the egoic level that the bud is a dense form, unless it's some sort of monadic projection, which is considered to be dense, because the monad does embody itself within the egoic lotus. And in the monad, these are subtle factors, and they went in a direction a little different than what I thought. I thought we would simply be dealing with the three vehicles. The personality vehicle as a whole, represented, I suppose, by the physical body, and then the egoic lotus as a whole, which would be it sometimes can be considered fourfold, because the three tiers and the bud make a number four. I want to say this should be kept in mind. That the three tiers and the bud make a four. But I was simply thinking of the vehicle and then eventually of the monadic vehicle, but there's more to it, isn't there? And, you know, it runs deep, so we can notice those factors which elude or evade our understanding and ponder on them. I do think that the monadic vehicle may be, in fact, geometric and the result of sound, and that may be what we are speaking of here as the fourth or manifesting factor of the monad. If students will bring this idea of the manifesting factor into the study and understanding of the astrological triangles and will refuse to lose sight of the related triple energies, well, I don't know how we could lose sight of it, they will greatly simplify their studies. The microcosm, when known, ever holds the clue to the macrocosm. In a way, we have kind of a fivefold structure in the soul, don't we? We have the central fire, or jewel, we have the three synthesis petals, and we have the nine ordinary petals, each one of them in a circular tier. So counting the three tiers and the tier of synthesizing pedals and the jewel, we have a 5. The really intangible part, of course, is the central fire. The macrocosm eternally reflects itself in man. It's a two-way street, really, the microcosm. And hence man has within himself the possibility and potentiality of total comprehension, if we use the law of correspondences or the law of analogy. So we have been working quite a bit that way with the law of analogy. And we have to always think about what the triangle is meant to produce and how it relates to a fourth item, or how it relates to a square or a quaternary or a field of manifestation. The threefold. See, again, in the monad, you know, if you think about it, look at the monad here. Well, you know, at a representation of the monad. Yeah, there it is. So the monad is triple. But there is a central fire. And there is a vehicle. So the monad, too, is in a way fivefold. The very essential volatile essence is one. The triple aspects are three: will, wisdom, and activity. And the vehicle itself, perhaps geometrical sound, an arrangement of matter which is geometrical and produced by sound, that's the fifth. So there's a five there. It's not an exact higher correspondence of the five we find in the egoic lotus, because we'd have to consider what is the vehicular correspondence. We have the three aspects and the three tiers of petals, and we have a fourth factor in the synthesis petals, and we have the central factor. But then there is the production of the entire egoic lotus itself, which might be considered a vehicle. It has to be a correspondence to the monadic vehicle. So in this case, we would have a kind of a six. With the personality, we have a four or a five. We have the fourfold personality with the etheric and physical body considered as one, but in a way, we have the dense physical body, the etheric body, the astral body, and the lower mental body all synthesized as a personality elemental, and so we can count as kind of a number five. Five in the monad, five in the personality, and a kind of a five or six on the level of the soul. Well, that's kind of extending the idea just a bit. So we want to simplify our studies. That's what we're trying to do. And we have to keep in mind the related triple energies and the manifesting factor, which I made in very bold print so I wouldn't forget it, and maybe you won't forget it either. There is a manifesting aspect in all these triplicities, which is the result of and conditioned by the interplay of the three forces. And then there seems to be some kind of life aspect, which is in the center of the triplicity, because will is not being. There's will, wisdom, and activity, but there's being. Being is the essence, is the volatile essence at the center of the monad. And in a way, that extends all the way down. We can look at it this way. It is that which is showing up as the personality consciousness amidst the four elementals. That presence is there in the personality, and it is the very essence of the monad, deeply extended as the jiva, as that which descends into matter. Then if we look at the soul, we have a fourfold structure, but we have the central fire or central consciousness. Again, the presence of the life of the monad. There's kind of a five in each place. And if we want to count the jewel as a separate thing with the central essence in the middle, then we have a 16, adding them all together. 5 monadic, 6 on the level of soul, and 5 on the level of personality. We have a 16, 3 of which are the presence of the being of the monad. 16, 15, 12, 9, 14, 13, many different ways of counting, depending upon what we want to emphasize. So it's quite relative, and we should not fix the enumeration as rigid, because we can count in different ways to make different points. But it is interesting that the personality is considered a factor of manifestation. I'll just put this down, personality as a factor of manifestation in the personality. The central bud as a factor of manifestation, in the soul. And what is the factor of manifestation? Let's call it this. Geometrized sound as a factor of manifestation in the monad. When we think of, you know, what really is the personality, it is the monad. The personality being consciousness, consciousness being, is the monad. The being consciousness of the soul is the monad. The being consciousness of the monad is the monad. And the being consciousness of anything is the one monad. Therefore, in all the many triplicities we shall study, we shall find correspondences to the monad, soul, and personality in man. I guess that's the point. And monad, soul, and personality are themselves correspondences of the great archetypal Trinitarian relationship in cosmos. We shall find one line of the triangle embodying determining and dominating force, which is the will, and two lines which, during a particular cycle, are conditioned by it. Now, the way we might look at that is to look at the monadic triangle and say, here is the determining and dominating force, and here are the two factors conditioned by it. But it's also possible to have a triangle in revolution, so that three factors of a triangle could revolve. Well, when you have a triangle between planets, even of fairly equal stature, one of them could be the determining and dominating force if the triangle revolved. And then that would occur for a particular cycle, and then another factor would be the determining and dominating force. So always in every triangle, there's one dominator, one dominating factor, and two condition factors. In zodiacal triangles, I suppose, and in planetary triangles, those are probably the easiest to fathom in that respect. When we look at the triangle of the monad, we cannot say, well, it's going to revolve in such a way that will no longer be the dominating force. Well, maybe it could be. There is a time in space when activity is dominant, and will and wisdom are more passive, and maybe when wisdom is dominant, and will and activity are more passive, and then, of course, finally, will is dominant, with wisdom and activity in a more passive or absorbent role. There is some complexity here, one can see. But anyway, he's making a general principle. We shall find one line of the triangle embodying determining and dominating force, and two lines which, during a particular cycle, are conditioned by it. That's a general principle. And we'll see if we can apply that to different triangles. For instance, you have an interesting illustration in the nature of fire esoterically understood in its triple expression in time and space during the cycle of manifestation. For as the Aegis Wisdom teaches that there is electric fire, will monad, or initiatory fire, solar fire, which is love wisdom, relates to the soul, it's a qualificatory fire, what a word, But that's what you have to do when you seek to make a new language. Fire by friction relates to the activity aspect. It relates to personality. It's purificatory fire. I feel like somehow this could be a little bit better arranged if we made it smaller. Let's make it like that. And see if we can get the idea here of what is above what. Initiatory fire, qualificatory fire, purificatory fire, soul, monad, and personality. And I'll take this back one and take this back one. I'd like to see that alignment. Well, I'm not doing so well. Love, wisdom, will, and activity. And taking the soul back. Oh, we're good now. Pretty good. Well, we do know that in this particular triangle, it's not always electric fire that's on top or dominating, but the degree to which will or solar fire needs to absorb activity is a question. Or the degree to which electric fire or solar fire are conditioned by activity is a question. Can the greater be conditioned by a lesser? I pointed out this triplicity as it is one which is familiar to you and at the same time constitutes a good illustration of a basic law. So in the early days of manifestation, the dominating factor is activity, fire by friction, personality, eventually becomes purifying and intellectual. But then we switch to the stage that maybe a number of us are finding ourselves in when solar fire is dominating. Love, wisdom, and soul are the dominating forces, and the others are more conditioned. If you have a higher factor, it can only be to a degree conditioned by a lower factor. Eventually, electric fire will be the conditioning factor. Will be dominant. The monad will be in the highest position. And this is always driving forward through space and initiating new experiences. Well, here we are. I think we may have reached a point. Not sure yet. Well, almost there. Because I extended the first program by quite a bit. A few minutes. So anyway, we always keep in mind of the one above and the two on the same line, just as we see in this particular illustration of the monad, one above and two being on the same line, or even in the triad, we can say that the one above conditions these other two, even though they are not on the same line. This is somewhat reflected in these little triangles, but it is always so that a lesser factor can be, in time and space, dominant, which is not what we would expect, but the higher factors unfold more slowly, and they cannot be dominant at first. They are weaker, and they cannot dominate. The lower chakras rule at first, then the middling chakras, then the higher chakras, across time and space. And so they form a triangle, and, well, I guess what we could say is, let's see if we can say this, that the forces, the emergent forces within a triangle are time conditioned. At different times, one or other of the three aspects rules. And that, you know, that's pretty obvious when you consider our chakric system. You know, just consider our chakric system in this way, that we have the head center, the heart center, and the throat center. Throat center will rule first. They are a triangle. The heart center will rule next, and finally, the head center will rule. That's a big generalization, of course, but we can look at all the other triangles all the way down to the little pranic triangle, the center in the between the shoulder blades, I suppose maybe below the, yeah, at the base of the shoulder blades, the center above the diaphragm, it's like the solar plexus, but above the diaphragm, and the spleen below the diaphragm, representing respectively rays 1, 2, and 3, and they rule pranically at different times. I think the principle is clear. Well, okay, where are we going next? Now we have the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 113B, page 415. And beginning of Esoteric Astrology 114A, page 415. I think that would be the best way to do it now. Just try to have patience, as I try to have patience with myself, as we try to think through these abstruse matters, which are not our normal focus of thought. And we try to have enough subtlety in our mind to make the correlations which will illumine the factors which are being discussed. We're looking at a great science of triplicities and how they affect manifestation. We're looking at a subtle aspect. In a certain sense, we have the number 8. The monad is 1, the triad is 3, triad soul is 3, the personality is 4. The monad is always a 1. The soul is called the triangle, so we're dealing with kind of a middle aspect, even though there is a threefold, fourfold nature to the monad. And the point of manifestation, or the square of manifestation, is fourfold. Add it all together, you get an 8, an important summary number for the three aspects of divinity. Monad 1, soul 3, personality 4, 8 all together. Given that the Antikorana may be shaped in terms of energy flows which approximate the figure 8, this is most interesting. All right, now I think we move on. And, yeah, we will move on and consider. He says, I point this triplicity out as it's one which is familiar to you, and the same time constitutes a good illustration. If we began with a triplicity which was not familiar to us, then we wouldn't have a basic foundation and understanding. This will help us understand better. So we're going to move on to 415. In just a little while, we'll begin Esoteric Astrology Adventure 114 in just a little while.